Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Thursday, October the 19th, 2017, of course. I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check out the show all the time at MetsMemorizedOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. And you can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcast service you desire. I hope everybody's doing well. Don't know when you're listening to this or where you're listening to this, but not the usual Sunday production that I put together. And like I had said, and really since the Mets season pretty much went into garbage time, and now it's the off season for the Mets, and we're still in the midst of the playoffs. It looks like it could be a Yankees-Dodgers World Series. Yankees need one more. Both teams need one more win after their respective games. Dodgers up 3-1, Yankees up 3-2. Not that you care about that because you want to talk Mets baseball. And quite a bit has happened since the last time we got together. And I was planning on doing a program on Sunday, and I wanted to center it on Brad Ausmus because he was a rumored candidate and one of the candidates that, if he were seriously being considered, had more of the managerial experience than anybody else, or, you know, Robin Ventura, of course. But Ausmus has been, with a team that has played at a high level at times, and it was an interesting and could have been a polarizing candidate. But since Sunday, and things didn't work out with a piece I was putting together, Ausmus pulled out. So I was like, all right, let's take a step back here. Let's see how things transpire so that I could give the podcast the freshest content and the ability to be relevant for more than just 24 hours. And I think after yesterday, we have an idea of where this thing is going. It's basically down. It's been down to six, but it looks like it's four candidates for the job. It's Joe McEwen, it's Kevin Long, Mickey Callaway, and then the surprising managerial candidate is Manny Acta, somebody that you may remember for his time as a third base coach of the Mets in Washington and Cleveland. And that's a bit of a surprise so far. So that's where the Mets are at. I'll have Paul Lebowitz. Actually, I had a chance to catch up with Paul late last night to get his thoughts. If you remember, Paul's been on the show, FanRagSports.com. FanRag has actually been really putting together some great content over the last couple of years. Paul's been part of it. You can check him out on Twitter, at Prince_of_NY on Twitter. A lot of opinions, always strong opinions, interesting take on baseball. So if you're on Twitter, and I'm sure you are, go there, follow Paul, and you'll hear that in just a couple of minutes as I get his take on the managerial candidates. But really, that's the big news, and you really can't sit here, I can at least, and even those like a Mike Puma of the New York Post, who's done most of the reporting when it comes to this search and really has done a nice job getting out in front of it. You can't really sit here and say, hey, this guy I prefer over that guy, because you really don't know any of these people. You don't know Mickey Callaway, the pitching coach for the Indians. Kevin Long's been with the Mets. He's been with the Yankees many, many years. But do you really know who Kevin Long is, other than he's the hitting coach and he's done a nice job with guys like Curtis Granderson and Daniel Murphy and players like that? Joe McEwing, you know him as a player. You don't know him as a coach. And Manny Acta has been here, and the only thing you do know, and he's who's left as in terms of managerial experience, Is that he went to Washington, had a tough time there in a rebuilding situation, and went to Cleveland when they were rebuilding. And there are, and the concern really with an ACTA is twofold. But one, you've heard and I've read that one of the issues he had, and he was pretty open about it, and this was an article upon his return to Washington as a coach for the Seattle Mariners, that he had some trouble communicating with players when he managed. This has nothing to do with the rebuilding situation. And if you remember those Washington Nationals teams with 2008, 2009, they had Elijah Dukes, Lastings Millage. They had some tough characters, not a high character team. Guys, I think, and ACTA had said it, that really didn't. They were there, and they were being taken on by the Nationals with some talent, and they had failed at other organizations because of their makeup. And that's a tough situation. Same thing in Cleveland. I think that was also the case. Then Mike Puma writes yesterday that a source tells him that, you know, ACTA doesn't handle controversy well. Well, look, at the end of the day, I keep going back, and I'll repeat it again because maybe you're listening to this for the first time. You've got to manage a bullpen. If anything you've seen this postseason is you've seen managers like A.J. Hinch, specifically in New York, for the Astros, do a really bad job of managing the bullpen, managing when to take his starter out. It's not a rocket science, but it's also not easy. And sometimes I think there's a lot of overthinking or a lot of industry group think on that. If you can't manage a bullpen, you know, all the other stuff doesn't matter. You need to be able to handle the clubhouse. You need to be able to handle the media. And the media, I was actually listening to Howie Rose on WOR on Friday, that one of the reasons he liked Terry Collins, and Howie I respect a lot. He's been in the business a long time. He pioneered in a lot of ways the talk radio format with WFAN and how he had the Mets Extra format and how he used to go after Davey Johnson. I mean, nobody young remembers how Howie used to on those pre- or post-game interviews, how he would go after Davey. Those were not snooze fest. Those were not like they are today with Wayne Randazzo and Terry Collins, where you ask some questions about the lineup, you validate the manager's point of view. Basically, you're giving the manager a pulpit to put his take on what's going to be going on, and it's not really a hardcore interview. Howie did a hardcore interview. You know, he said he liked Collins because Collins was great to him to talk baseball with and gave access, and that's not enough. That's good for the media and for their job. That's not enough. That's not, to me, a reason to give a manager a pass like Terry Collins did, but Terry handled the media. Terry did a phenomenal job of managing the media. And then you obviously have the clubhouse, and Terry's big strategy with the clubhouse to make sure that he kept it clean was to make sure he never criticized and always stuck up for his players. Howie also intimated that that Terry had an issue with the Latin players, namely maybe Cespedes, that Cespedes never warmed up to him. So you have those things. Those are things that are going to be important. You know, Manny ACTA, again, I don't know him, but he's the one that brings up some red flags. Knowing that he has a relationship with the organization, he very well, although the rumor is Kevin Long is the favorite, and I wouldn't be surprised if someone who has strong ties or has worked for the organization that may know Fred Wilpon or Jeff Wilpon, and they personally like them, would be the favorite, you know, regardless of how they interview and how things go. So I am encouraged in one sense, regardless of the act, the piece of everything, that the Mets are looking for managers who aren't retreads. ACTA, I guess, falls in that category, so they're not completely going away from that. But originally, they were going to be six, and you had names like Guerin and Ventura. Chip Hale's name has come up. But that's the one name, Chip Hale, that I thought they should give a little bit more of a look. You know, I read an article from early spring 2016 about Chip Hale, and there were a lot of things about his preparation, his intensity, his passion, his energy, that was talked about in the piece. And this is after Arizona, even though they had a losing record in 2015, had in some ways finished just under 500 and had overachieved. And I know that Chip Hale finished second to Collins, or reportedly finished second to Collins, during the first round when they looked at interviews back in 2010 when Sandy Alderson took over. And I thought, yeah, he failed, but he sounds a little Buck Showalter-esque in that sense. But that's the kind of manager that sometimes I think, especially after the low-energy, complacent, grandpa, you know, type of environment that Terry created that I thought would be an interesting fit, and it doesn't look like the Mets are going to go in that direction. But again, each of these managers I'm not exposed to enough, and it doesn't really make sense at this point to dive into Chip Hale because he's not seriously being considered. It would be great. Let's get a writer. Let's go and see someone who covered him. What's he all about? You know, we did that with Ventura for a little bit a couple of weeks ago, a week and a half ago. So that's where it's at. It'll be interesting. And here's what I Alex Cora, you know, is another name. Obviously, he would check off the boxes here. And Alex Cora, who knows? Who knows about Alex Cora? Who knows what he's all about? Most believe he's going to go to Boston. There's been a report, 99.9%, that he's going to Boston. So it's McEwing, it's Callaway, it's Joey Cora, it's Alex Cora, it's Manny Acta, and on the peripheral, Guerin and Chip Hale, guys like that, they're out. If the report is accurate, and the Mets have actually done a pretty good job, for the most part, at keeping this close to the vest. And that's what Sandy Alderson does. I was so shocked when Terry Collins was hired, and I know that at the time, Adam Rubin was reporting it on when Adam, just I think he had gone over to ESPN New York. Adam Rubin was reporting it that Collins was a favorite. I didn't believe it. I was like, nah, he's not. But look what happened. And 7 years later, Collins, the longest tenured manager in Mets history. The other big thing is the Mets going from Las Vegas to Syracuse. I think that has a chance of happening in 2018. That is a huge move. It does make sense. I know the Mets are trying to brand their organization up New York State. You have Brooklyn, you have Binghamton now, you have Syracuse. You have three levels of baseball, Rookie League, AA, AAA, all in New York State. And you can kind of build a bit of a brand. I had talked to a friend who works in minor league baseball that the Syracuse Chiefs have been in real dire financial straits and a position that it wasn't surprising that they had to go out and get some financial help. Mets pounced on that. So who knows when they're going to move. I know it's going to probably more than likely be 2019, but 2018. And hopefully this one sticks. Buffalo did not work out. It was at a time when Tony Bernazard was around. At the beginning, the Mets had made promises with Omar Minaya. They had put bad teams up there. They put a new stadium there. Sponsored by Coca-Cola, and the relationship just wasn't what I think the Bisons wanted. And the way things are now with minor league baseball is you have these 2 to 4 year player development contracts, and it's like you see teams moving around more often than you would expect. I mean, the Mets were in Norfolk for 30 years, and it's starting to stabilize a little bit because it's not probably healthy for either the minor league team or the organization every 2 to 4 years to be changing affiliations. I mean, for the minor league team and the fans, obviously they're running it independently. The big league club is not picking up operational cost. It's more about the player situation. But you want to have some kind of consistency, you know, maybe have some ability as a fan base in that market to see who the big league club is and who could be coming up and on the way. And I think there's a benefit for a long-term partnership and consistency, certainly from the big league side. I'm speaking more on the minor league side, maybe not as important because it's about then and now, and there's going to be a lineup, there's going to be players, there's going to be a roster, whether it's the Indians roster, the Mets roster. But I know it isn't because Buffalo wouldn't have left the Mets if they didn't feel the relationship and the synergy between big league club and minor league club was important. So Syracuse, I think, is a great spot. I think the Mets have been looking at Rochester for a while. Syracuse, Buffalo, places like that in the International League. Now you actually can get a better feel of your pitchers, your hitters. You can get players from Syracuse down to New York in about an hour. It'll create less issues. It's a great thing. That was one of the better pieces of news. And look, really since the end of the season and with all the disappointment, the firing of Collins and Worth and the fact that the Mets took an aggressive, progressive step to clean up that managerial pitching coach situation that had gone so bad, the change from Vegas to Syracuse. The Mets are doing the things that need to be done that I've been saying for a while need to be done to get this organization cleaned up. And I think the 2015 World Series, and I've said this since day one of the podcast, hit a lot of issues or made everybody overlook a lot of issues, things that had gone bad in this organization. And it started with the manager and the pitching coach. And all I hope And I'll leave you guys with this, is we're going to go and I'm going to take a break, and then we'll hear what Paul Lebowitz thinks about this whole thing. All I hope is that the manager they hire because he's the right fit, not because he's the cheapest, not because he gets along the best with Fred Wilpon, not because he's the most controllable, that he has the right combination of people skills, leadership, energy. And I would really question him about his ability to manage a bullpen. And I'm not in those interviews, and I've never sat in a managerial interview for a big league job. But I think most importantly, that would be how I would look at the interview process. And I guess we'll see, and we'll keep an eye out for this, and we'll see how things transpire. And if somebody rises to the top, if it's Kevin Long, if it's Mickey Callaway, we'll see if we get a podcast and a piece together and learn a little bit more about that individual on a deeper level for those that have covered them. So sit tight. I'm going to take a quick break. We'll have Paul Lebowitz, FanRag Sports, right after this.
Hey, Mets fans. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. If you're looking for the best unbiased and independent coverage of the New York Mets, then look no further than MetsMerizedOnline.com. Mesmerized Online is the go-to place for comprehensive Mets coverage, including exclusive interviews, daily original articles, great weekly features, in-depth analysis, minor league reports, game-by-game breakdowns, and so much more. Find out why thousands of fans turn to Mesmerized Online every day to get the latest news and opinions about the Mets. Coming from an impressive staff of the most passionate fans and skilled writers ever assembled, all in one place. Check it out for yourselves, Mets fans. Go to MetsMerizedOnline.com right now. That's Mets, M-E-R-I-Z-E-D, online.com, and get mesmerized today.
We're back, and joining me, friend of the show, it's been a while. You can follow him on FanRag Sports, also on Twitter at Prince_of_NY. Paul Lebowitz, and Paul, welcome back to the program. And for Mets fans, then there were six candidates left, and it should be an interesting, I guess, 7 to 10 days, maybe a little longer, but I think we're in the home stretch, and I think you're going to see the 21st manager of the Mets be named very shortly. Don't you agree?
Are there still six? Because MLB Trade Rumors was reporting that Guerin and Hale are out.
Yeah, here's what I have. I have, and listen, again, this is not my knowledge. This is what they're reporting. So we got Kevin Long. Well, you said Guerin and that's right. So those guys are out. So that you got Kevin Long, Manny Acton, Mickey Callaway, Joe McEwing. You're taking out, obviously, the other two guys who were under consideration. So you're right. You got about four left, and I think if you put, you know, a blanket over these guys, well, I mean, they're all, no one really could say I want one over the other because you really don't know. Manny Acton is the one that I'm actually kind of surprised is being considered. That's the one, I guess, that is a little bit out of left field, for lack of a better word.
I get the impression that Acton has a good reputation inside the game, and he's not very exciting to the fans, but with every job that opens up, whether it's a sabermetric job or an older school manager job, his name comes up. And I don't think it's to fulfill the requirement of a minority interview. Why would they just keep interviewing him if that was the case? He seems to have a good reputation. He was here before. I don't know if you want to go that route, go back to the Willie Randolph days and a guy who's had a couple of managerial jobs and failed. I just don't know if that's the road you want to take. He'll come cheap if that's what they're looking for, and he'll do what he's told.
Yeah, and then all these guys. Yeah, all these guys are going to be relatively in the same financial stratosphere. And the interesting thing is, and I had said six, Bob Guerin and Chip Hale are not being considered. That's correct. And Chip Hale was the one I'm a little bit surprised at. I was reading a little bit up about him. Now, these are old articles from early 2016 with Arizona. I mean, a guy who sounds a little bit like Buck Showalter, very prepared, intense, maybe the, you know, to use the, for lack of a better word, the term old school. I know things didn't end well in Arizona, maybe not all his fault. Tony La Russa, there was a lot going on there. As you can see, that team bounced back. he's reportedly, if we believe, you know, and again, who knows, because things are pretty tight-lipped around the Mets, was second to Terry Collins in the first round of interviews when they did those back in 2010. I was a little surprised. Guerin, not as much, but again, you know, everybody had pegged him because he's, you know, Oakland guy, and everyone just assumed that Sandy Alderson would go with somebody that he knew, and he has some ties to the Mets as a bench coach.
The backlash with Guerin seemed to be very, very strong, and you remember when he left as a bench coach, he wanted to be closer to his family in California, so it might have been something that he didn't want to just turn around and leave the Dodgers to come back to New York and deal with this situation, replacing Terry and being a former coach for Terry. I don't know that the front office was thinking that they could sell this. They could say, look, we've got Bob Guerin, considering the reaction they were getting. And if they were going to go down that road, what's the difference between Bob Guerin and any of these other names they're hiring? He didn't do particularly well with Oakland, and it would not be a sexy hire. And the Mets aren't going to go that route anyway, but he's not someone who is even going to draw any attention whatsoever.
Right. And I'll give Sandy Alderson credit. Look, the names are creative. I mean, Kevin Long, I know he was on the staff. I would not have thought of he as somebody that they would have considered. Joe McEwing, that's an exciting name. I mean, everybody's talking about Alex Cora. And the thought is that he's probably going to go to Boston, and then, like we said, act as the one that's out of left field, but he does have ties to the organization. And he does have a sketchy resume where, you know, he'd even admitted, I was reading something from, I guess it was earlier, if not this year, maybe late last year when he went back to Washington with Seattle, and he admitted that, you know, he didn't communicate that well with the players. It was a tough situation in Washington, and then he went to rebuilding situation in Cleveland. But, you know, I think this is going to come down to Long and McEwing, and I think everyone seems to think it's Kevin Long. And sometimes when that momentum and that kind of that rumor mill gets out, you have to wonder if that's the Mets trial ballooning it to see what the fans think. If he's a leader, he communicates. I mean, who the hell knows anything else about him and how he's going to handle things? But he's certainly done a nice job as a hitting coach, if you could quantify that. I think at least it seems that way anyway.
Every team most teams drop those trial balloons to see what the reaction is going to be. But here's my problem with Kevin Long. If it's Alderson's decision and he interviews Kevin Long, he does all the interviews with all the candidates, and that's who he picks, fine. If it's because the Mets are, A, afraid of him leaving, as he supposedly threatened to do if he doesn't get the managerial job, and if Long has cozied up to Jeff Wilpon, and that is somehow influencing Alderson. When Alderson signed a 2-year contract, who knows how much longer he's going to be here. So obviously this manager, if they have any success at all, is going to outlast Sandy Alderson. So do you really want someone who hasn't managed he managed in the minor leagues in 1998 and 99.
Right.
And
yeah,
he's never even been a bench coach, which I don't think is that big of a deal considering some of the other names that they're considering. But the dynamics are what concerns me about that. And you've got a team that underachieved this year, and you're going to just elevate somebody from the staff. You better get a great bench coach, and you better have a pitching coach who knows what he's doing. It's a lot to ask. If they're going to go down this road of just some guy, then you might as well hire Mickey Callaway and go for the deep strike, go for somebody young and give him an opportunity rather than just one of these retreads or somebody who's like a faceless name. And I'm not even that enamored of Mickey Callaway because I'm not that into hiring a pitching coach as a manager. But considering who else they're hiring, I mean, my first choice would be Joe Girardi, but that's not happening now. So
right, Yankees, as we're recording this, Yankees are going to be up 3-2. And, I mean, I don't know if they're going to go to the World Series, but, I mean, even so, waiting back. I was wondering on that note, I mean, nobody knows what's going on in Washington with Dusty Baker, and he has issues as well, but anywhere he goes, he takes over programs that either have been failing or have issues and turns them around. It doesn't sound like the Mets are going to stick around and wait for anybody. Now, you wrote late September that the Mets need to find their Terry Francona. And that, you know, that's a manager that actually falls into the failed somewhere else, maybe not really appreciated because he was in a bad situation like he was with the Phillies. You know, what are you looking for in a manager, Paul? What do you feel is the right fit for a guy in the dugout? Or are you like a lot of these stat guys, you think the whole thing is overrated?
I don't think the manager is overrated. I think it has to be someone who is aware of the stats but can be flexible as the game moves along. And he's not making these moves just so he has an explanation to the media and to the front office if it doesn't work. So it's got to be somebody with confidence who knows what he's doing and isn't afraid to make a move against the grain to protect himself. And it also depends on the situation. I mean, Brad Ausmus was kind of who I was thinking about when I was mentioning the Francona comp. But
right.
He's already backed out of the situation. And automatically they go, well, nobody wants to come to the Mets. Well, that's just silly. For him, his situation kind of mirrored what happened with Bob Melvin when he took over for Lupinella with Seattle. He walked into a clubhouse from a veteran manager with a veteran team that was on the downside, and he did the best he could. He had to placate them. He had to humor them. And they never quit on him, but it didn't work. Now, with the Mets, it would probably be a similar situation that he was walking into. He was walking into a clubhouse with Terry Collins' players and a veteran core and a young pitching staff and a media that's going to be all over him and questioning why he didn't do well in Detroit. And for somebody like him, I would think Philadelphia would be a better job where he can grow with them. I don't even think Boston's a good idea for him either, but he can learn his craft a little bit better than he did in Detroit. Because, I mean, it was just kind of like a caretaker in Detroit, and it was a really tough situation.
No doubt. And here's the other thing. The one thing that you mentioned the media, anything I've read about Ausmus is that the media bothered him a little bit in Detroit. And this has nothing to do with the Mets. I think that the Ventura turning down the Mets and Ausmus, or maybe not turning them down, saying I'm not interested, they have to factor in the media in New York. And let's face it, the Mets media, the Mets beat, was very kind to Terry Collins. But I was listening to Howie Rose on WOR late last week, and Howie loved Terry, and the reason he loved Terry, whether you like Terry, Paul, you dislike, I mean, you and I have talked about him way too much over the years on Twitter and on the air. But right away he said, well, what I liked about Terry is the access he gave us, the way he let us in on information. He gave the radio guys the respect they needed to do their job, because you let the writers leave the office, and then he'd sit with them extra time. I mean, Terry did a phenomenal job managing the press, and it is something that you need to do in this job. And I don't know if you're going to get that from anybody else, because I think Terry maybe overdid it and maybe focused on it too much, to the point where he co-opted them. I don't think there's any question that he co-opted them, and I don't think an Ausmus was going to do that. And I think they all know, getting into this job, the scrutiny, and also dealing with the Yankees, which is part of it, it's not for everybody. I don't think that's an indictment on the Mets at all.
You mentioned Ventura. I'm fine with laid back. I'm not fine with comatose. And a lot of times with the White Sox, it seemed like it was a very laissez-faire attitude. Like, I really don't need to be doing this. I'm just doing it to see if I like it, and I can take it or leave it. And that, you cannot have that attitude in New York, because that's going to be seen right through, and they're automatically going to go after you if it doesn't work. Because they want passion, and Ventura might be a competitor, he might be passionate, but he's got the laid-back California attitude, and a guy who just does not care one way or the other whether he's doing this job. So I don't think as good a player as he was here, that was not going to work. And as far as the media access goes, I think that's up to the organization to limit it as much as possible. You know, this is when you can meet with the manager, that's when he's available. And, you know, Terry may have gone overboard, and it may have been too much kowtowing to the media. And if with a younger guy, the younger guy is not going to want to be dealing with the media as much as Collins did in trying to get them on his side, which he, after his other two managerial jobs didn't work, he had to do.
No doubt. I have with me Paul Lebowitz. You can check him out on FanRag Sports and on Twitter. Paul does some great work. does a ton of baseball stuff over there, and you know, he has opinions about a bunch of stuff on Twitter. Let's get to some other things that have been talked about with the Mets, and we haven't even gotten into the offseason, the hot stove. We're still in the postseason, but Mets fans are looking towards 2018. Starting to get some rumblings, and I know Joel Sherman, your favorite writer there, started it about, would Todd Frazier be a good fit on the Mets? Mets are going to need a third baseman unless Wright has some miraculous recovery. Frazier's numbers aren't great, but when you start to peel them a little bit, they're not terrible. And, I mean, Sherman has talked about, as well as some of the other writers, about how the Mets may need a culture change. I think that starts with the manager a little bit. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, you've seen Frazier in the postseason. He's had a couple of big hits. He's not bad defensively. What are your thoughts on Todd Frazier?
How was his culture in Chicago? I mean, what did he add there? You know, at the end of his tenure in Cincinnati, what did he add there? And that stuff is a little bit overrated, especially for a backup or an extra guy like Todd Frazier. And to me, if you're looking to upgrade certain positions, I would just as soon put Wilmer Flores at third base and just tell him, you're not moving from third base. You're playing third every day. That's the end of, you know, independent of Wright. I don't think anybody's expecting anything there. You're playing, once spring training rolls around, I mean, and they see where Wright is, which is unlikely to be able to play. You just tell Wilmer, and you're going to play third base. We're not moving you. We're not shifting you. Just keep in mind you're the third baseman, and then go get a second baseman, whether it's D. Gordon or Ian Kinsler or bringing back Neil Walker or somebody. And I prefer to do that and live with it for the year and then see what's going on with Machado and Josh Donaldson and whatever other third baseman might be available.
You even threw out the name T.J. Rivera on Twitter. I mean, that's, I think we his season got short-circuited because of the Tom John surgery. He's a position player. Maybe he's not back right away in spring training or the beginning of the season, but you would expect him back and being able to play. And look, that's another interesting name. I don't know if we've seen the total package there yet, what he can do. He's hit everywhere he's played, and he has hit at the big league level, although he hasn't gone around the league a lot. That's an interesting name, and you're right.
You can't pencil him in.
It's not as dire. It's not as dire a situation as everybody works in absolute. The Yankees are the greatest thing since sliced bread now. The Mets are hopeless. I mean, nothing is as black and white as it's made out to be, in my opinion. There is stuff to work with here for the next manager. I do believe that. They need to make some changes, but this is not the worst situation roster-wise to walk into.
The first thing they have to do is stay healthy. And with T.J. Rivera, I mean, there's nothing wrong with being that extra utility guy, getting 250, 300 at-bats moving all around. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. And he's very streaky, so you're going to have to sit him down for stretches when he's not hitting. Guys like him, when they're not hitting and the ball's not falling in, are not going to contribute anything because he doesn't walk and he doesn't hit a lot of home runs. So, I mean, that's where somebody like Todd Frazier could be useful, but he's not going to want to be just this extra guy playing third or first base every once in a while or the outfield. So even when he's not hitting, he still walks and he hits home runs. But, I mean, it's a thought, but I'm not going to commit to Todd Frazier unless it's for 1 year. And to me, I would like to see what Wilmer Flores does if he plays 150 games, because he's going to eventually bulk up and be one of those guys who just starts hooking balls around the left field foul pole and hits 35 home runs. Whether it's here or somewhere else is a question.
His defense, though, Paul, and I've seen it, and a lot of it is footwork. I think his best position is first base. And, you know, I wonder, because Dominic Smith is certainly not a shoo-in to be on the roster. And I don't want to judge him on 170 plate appearances or whatever he had. There was a lot of red flags with Dominic Smith. Now, he's young. He's going to have a chance to learn and grow and what have you. But if you're going to contend next year, I'm not sure that you're going to want to go with both Rosario and Smith at those positions. I think Flores at first base, I don't know about you. It's not, to me, that's his position. But I feel much better about him in the field than I do up the middle, or I think third base is his worst. Shortstop's his worst position, and that side of the field he's pretty bad on both ends.
I think like you said, it's his footwork, and a lot of the errors he made were throwing. The balls he can get to, he catches, mostly. But he seems to stop concentrating, and he doesn't step and throw, and the ball sails on him away from the first baseman. Now, he's okay at first base. I mean, you could live with him there, but you have this first-round pick who showed a little bit more power than we expected, and he seemed a little nervous, a little shaky even defensively, but that's something. If he has a naturally good glove, which he seemed to have the reputation of, then he'll be okay. You have to give the kid a chance. I mean, he's a first-round pick, and he wasn't considering the situation, he was okay.
D. Gordon, you mentioned that name. I'm conflicted on that. I don't know what he's going to cost in terms of prospects. I think if you're picking up $50 million from the now Derek Jeter Marlins, you probably could get away with not giving up the most talent because you are taking salary off their hands. So a guy who's going to get you 200 hits if he plays every day, steals 50, 60 bases, hit, 280 to 300. And again, I don't know if this is because of the home run craze and how they measure this, but when you look at him in terms of like a league average player, he's actually a below league average player. Even the years he's hit 300. Defensively, he's okay. He's actually more than okay. He's won a Gold Glove. I don't know. I'm kind of hot and cold on D. Gordon. He's one of those guys that, he doesn't hit the ball extremely hard all the time. He's not going to make you – you're not going to get exit velo out of him, right, Paul? So that's the thing. From a process standpoint, there's a lot of things that you're not going to like about D. Gordon. But at the end of the day, he adds an element, and I think you pointed it out on Twitter with these games in the postseason. Once your offense gets shut down and power is all you have, you can't manufacture anything. You got yourself a problem, and that would be solved somewhat with D. Gordon at the top of the lineup.
I mean, if we're going to get into exit velocity and the advanced stats, his BR WAR.
Bring it up, come on.
Well, his BR WAR has been 2.4 in his last year with the Dodgers, 4.9 in 2015, 0.8 in 2016 was a down year, and he was suspended, and 3.1 in 2017. And he's a Gold Glove defender. He's somebody you can stick at the top of the lineup. He doesn't walk, which, Sandy's not going to like, but he doesn't strike out. And if he's going to come in and steal 60 bases and play great defense at second base, hey, that's fine with me. And, I mean, I don't know what Jeter's thinking over there. I don't know if he's going to give him away just to get rid of the salary and what his feelings are about trading with the Mets. So that's another issue you have to consider. Is he going to want to be Derek Jeter makes trade with the Mets and helps the Mets? You don't know, but it wouldn't cost a significant number of prospects to get him if you're taking the entire salary. And this is something you need. They don't have any. They haven't had focused on defense in a very long time. And right there, if Rosario, loses that like cultish clumsiness he has, you got a very good up the middle defense right there. If Lagares is playing.
A lot of speed. That is an interesting, and that's a great point you just made. You go back to, and I don't know if they'd hit Rosario second, probably lower down in the order. But, the one thing you saw out of Rosario, he's got a lot of potential. You saw that with the bat. He actually thought he handled himself pretty well with the bat. He does space out in the field, and some of that could be nerves. Some of that could be just experience. And it was basically
I think he's just too quick for his own good.
Yeah, that could be very well. The time, I think, will solve that. Reyes had the same problem. Wright had that problem earlier in their career, too. So it's not uncommon for a young player. But he's got speed. And if you get that up-the-middle defense at a place with those kind of guys, even Ian Kinsler, I don't watch him every day. Maybe he's lost a step, but he's a pretty good defensive player, steady at the very least. I think you see a big difference in the staff. Even in the bullpen, if you bring in a guy like Chad Bradford, a ground ball guy, what bothers me about the league is that everybody wants to put in rockhead pitchers who throw 95-plus miles an hour, and it's straight, and everyone gets excited about it. But these guys can't get anybody out. All I heard is how great this Davinsky guy is from Jonah Kerry all year, the Astros, because he had all these strikeouts. I thought he looked terrible, and I know it's a small sample, but, you look at that with some defense, with some little things that are getting overlooked in this modern era of baseball, all of a sudden you got yourself, a different look, a different feel, and a team that's better able to compete over the long haul.
When you abandon the roles for the relievers, they're not going to know when they're coming into pitch. They're not going to know what the situation is when they're going to be needed. So, yeah, I kind of understand using the best reliever for the best particular circumstance, but these are young guys who are not going to complain, but you're just taking them and sticking them, okay, you're going to pitch here, and he's going to pitch then, and it's like, when do I start getting ready? When do I start thinking about it? When do I start getting loose? And I don't know what the Astros' problem with Luke Gregerson is, but with a 4-0 lead, you could bring a veteran in just to hold the game at 4 runs instead of just. First of all, I wouldn't have started the inning with McCullers, because once you start thinking about taking the pitcher out, take him out. And they gave the home run that opened the door. And the Astros, like you said, they have all these guys that throw 100 miles an hour, and their bullpen really isn't very good. I mean, I don't trust Ken Giles. I didn't like that trade when they made it. He's been mostly reliable. But
no.
It's just their bullpen is – it may have blown the series for them.
Yeah, no, and now they're in dire straits. You surprised about the Yankees? I mean, look, they got a really good bullpen. That always translates well. I think the starting pitching has been so much better than we could have expected. They've scored just enough runs. And what's funny is we keep hearing about how Yankee Stadium is back, but did they not win a World Series in this stadium? Am I missing something? I know it's been kind of down in terms of the apathy over the last few years, but when you have boring veteran teams that aren't really built to go anywhere, they're basically in the middle, mediocre, not bad, not good. That'll do it for you. It's funny. All of a sudden, I guess 2009 didn't happen. I guess you and I imagined that.
If only.
Right.
They created this. They made the stadium very, very unfriendly to the rank-and-file fan. And the ones that are there, they're in the bleachers. And you see the video clips on Twitter of them really acting, you know, badly. But the fans that are closest to the field, they're this corporate, they've made this cold corporate, you know, mausoleum, basically. And I don't know if a lot of these fans that are coming to the games now are buying the tickets, you know, from third party sites to get to go to the game. But the people you're going to see during the season are these people who just got the tickets and, you know, let's go to the game. And they're kind of half interested and they want to go sit in the bar and they want to get the free food and all that stuff. But, you know, back to whether they're a good team or not, the Yankees are a good team. I mean, this idea, though, that they're this unheralded group, this little engine that could. I said this the other day. I mean, come on now. You're not a little engine that could when you're in a $200 million payroll at season start. And a couple of people pointed out, well, they still had A-Rod's contract on the books. Yes, so the starting lineup was loaded with guys who were either top prospects or had a history of being, you know, legit star players.
So, and they always had the money to compete.
Yeah,
the margin of error. The margin of error with them. They have a larger margin of error when you have that kind of a player on the roster. I don't know if the American League is really all that good as we make it out.
That's what I was thinking.
I think the Dodgers are a lot better. And I don't think the Dodgers are great. I think the Dodgers have that it factor. I hate to use that, but that's kind of what I see. I think the Dodgers are a lot better than anybody I've seen in the American League. Even the Nationals. The Nationals, and they had their issues, but you know, I mean, maybe we've overrated the American League. Maybe the Indians weren't all as good as we thought. I think the Astros, I've been thoroughly unimpressed. I wasn't all that impressed with them when the Mets went into Houston and played them, even though they got swept.
It's either if you're going to get shut down, they have a couple guys who can run. Altuve can run, but they don't really use the stolen base to manufacture any runs. It's always we're going to hit home runs, and their hitting coach, who used to be here, it was Dave Hudgens. If you don't think you can hit a home run, don't swing at it. I mean, okay, they've cut their strikeouts down, but when they're not hitting home runs, they're running into this Yankees bullpen who they can't seem to touch. How are you scoring? It's just the way they build that team, it's not built to win these type of games where you have to just find a way to win. And the Yankees do have guys who hit home runs, and they have a couple guys who can run. And they're very versatile. But you look at the rest of the American League after the Indians and, you know, the Red Sox, look at the teams that were fighting for the wild card. None of them were particularly good. I mean, the Twins got the second wild card. The Twins, they're not good. They lost 100 games a year ago, and it was almost a borderline miracle and parity that got them to the 85 wins. They didn't expect it. They didn't believe it. And I kind of get the idea they would have preferred not to have gotten to that point and gotten everyone's hopes up as they're trying to they're rebuilding the organization from bottom to top. This didn't help them all that much.
No, not at all. So before I let you go, what's your prediction? Who will the next Mets manager be? You have your thoughts on anybody. Is there anybody you prefer? I mean, what, now that we kind of gone through the whole thing, what is, you know, out of those that we believe to be actually serious contenders, where do you see this ending up?
I was resistant to it, but now looking at the candidates and the guys are dropping out, I would say just go for it with Mickey Callaway and see what happens. Because you never know. Yeah, I mean, he might walk in and he might just really wow them with the interview and say, you know what? He's young. And the most important thing for the Mets is those pitchers. So if he can handle a vanilla offense and just run the offense and leave it be and have a veteran bench coach who does not want to manage again and a pitching coach who's on the same thought process with him, it can work. Because the key to this team is those pitchers.
I mean, Paul, if you can't manage the staff and manage the bullpen, I just don't think you can manage a big league club anymore. It's just so important. And I'm not saying it's easy. It's not. And it's amazing how much bad bullpen. You brought it up with A.J. Hinch. And I don't know if it's
A.J. Botch.
You know, groupthink. I just don't get how many managers don't get their bullpen. They're with these guys all the time. And I don't know if it's paint by numbers, if it's you know, afraid to be criticized. Maybe you and I, just from a media perspective, we're putting too much power in the media for them to, you know, scare these guys into not wanting to be second guessed. There's just a lot. If you can't manage a bullpen, you're seeing it right before your eyes. You really lose a lot of value, even if you are good with the media, even if you are good at communicating and leading the clubhouse. You know, a bad bullpen, a bad blown save could take out the air out of a series, whether it be the playoffs or the regular season. How many times is a blown save, a really gut-wrenching blown save? I think there's a carryover effect, especially in the postseason, but even the regular season. A lot of that sometimes has to do with the way a manager, you know, botches the whole decision-making process.
See, we don't know what's going on inside the clubhouse a lot of times, so it becomes hard to criticize every move that's made, because if, say, there's a day you wanted to use Addison Reed and his shoulder was a little tender, but you don't want to tell anybody about that. So what do? Right. You come up with an excuse that, you know, you don't believe, they don't buy. It makes no sense, but it's better to do that and take the hit for the player and protect him than it is to say exactly what's going on.
That's right.
And I think Terry was guilty of that a lot of times, and he wasn't very good at it, like, you know, fending it off. There are guys who are very good at that. I mean, Girardi's pretty good at it. Yeah, Francona's great at it. So that's a big part of managing today. And, you know, you don't know with Callaway. I've never even heard him speak. But sitting next to Francona and his reputation as a pitching coach, maybe that'll get through and they can deal with the growing pains of a manager who's never managed before, which, I mean, I've said repeatedly, I want someone who's done the job before, but considering the names they're looking at, you know, obviously they're going to pick someone who either has very little managerial experience or
not
managerial
at all.
Experience without a great deal of success.
Right, absolutely. So what do you got coming up at FanRag Sports? Give a little teaser to the listeners.
The Dodgers perspective whenever this thing ends, whether it's tonight or after game five or whenever. I mean, if the Cubs manage to pull off a miracle, but that's what's up.
Your favorite
upcoming
manager, and Joe Maddon, with your favorite manager, Joe Maddon, anything is possible. You follow Paul on Twitter at Prince_of_NY. You'll know what I mean.
It really does amaze me, though, that the things that, you know, we discussed on Twitter when the Cubs hired him and gave him all that money.
And I'd like Joe Maddon, but the more I see of him, I was wrong. I thought that Maddon was – the Mets were crazy not to go after him. I have not been impressed at all.
Look,
since he's been with
he's
the
a good manager. He's also a relentless self-promoter. And the things he says, it's like everything is about him. And I just kind of get the idea a lot of the players are sick of it. And this whole, the outfits and all this, like, this stuff that you have to deal with him. And I don't know why the Cubs gave him that kind of contract anyway. Where was he going?
I don't think he gets bullpen management. I think he's actually pretty bad at it. I mean, I think he kind of, from a culture standpoint, has a short shelf life. I think I could see. Look, he's become, you know, anybody who's praised by the media like he has been is going to get full of themselves at some point. But I think he's done a very bad. I think in the National Series, he did a bad job managing the bullpen, letting Bryce Harper against the righty.
Well, that you see, this is the point. They keep saying how good Carl Edwards was against lefties. Yeah, how many of those lefties are Bryce Harper? It's like just this random stat.
Unless it's my close in the eighth or ninth inning, and I know this is hard. I would never allow myself to be beat by Bryce Harper in the late innings, eighth or ninth, unless it's my closer, without going with a lefty. If I'm the Mets, I always go Jerry Blevins, Bryce Harper. If it's your closer, then you got to swallow that. But even then, you know, who says you have to
Collins
play
pulled,
by conventional
Collins put Josh Edgen in. He pulled Familia early in the season.
That's what I would do. Every time that guy's up in a big spot, I'd go lefty-lefty. Doesn't mean I'm always going to be successful. He's got a great eye. The percentage odds that he's going to make an out are much higher, and I was amazed at that. But
Madden's transgressions a year ago, had he cost them the World Series, that was far more worthy of a firing than anything Grady Little did. Because he almost single-handedly blew that World Series.
Would have been interesting if they did lose that World Series. What would have happened?
They're not going to fire him. They're not.
Probably not. No, I agree with you on that.
If for no other reason than he's got that giant contract.
Right. Paul, it's been a pleasure, man. We got to do this more often. What was the last time? About All-Star break? You take the Twitter banter to the airwaves. It always is it is always fun. we gotta do it again, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Paul Lebowitz. Paul, thanks a lot, man. Have a great night.
All right, Mike.
All right. Paul Lebowitz. Prince of New York on Twitter at Prince_of_NY, FanRagSports.com. So good stuff. Want to thank everybody for tuning in here. Hope you enjoyed it. As I said in the open, I'm going to continue to keep an eye on this managerial race, so to speak. I'm actually glad we waited. I was going to do a spot on Sunday, and like I said in the open, things got a little thrown off. And I wound up pushing it till today. I had a chance to talk to Paul, and I'm glad because I was going to focus more on Brad Ausmus, and sure enough, within 24 hours, that would have been a stale segment. So getting into the middle of the week, I'm going to keep my eye out as to what the how this horse race goes and where it's going, and as news transpires. But right now, I think we kind of have a feel of down to four. It was six. Looks like it's going to be four. I got to get my math straight. Like I said to Paul, I counted wrong. I was counting Guerin and Hale, which is unfair. They were not seriously considered. But anyway, I thought it was a fun segment. Always get a chance to catch up with Paul and have some fun. So hope everybody enjoyed it. But, of course, I want to thank Paul Lebowitz. You can check him out, like I said, on Twitter, at Prince_of_NY. Check him out at FanRagSports.com. Of course, you can check me out at our partners over there at MetsMorizeOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you can get the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If I'm not on one, let me know. I'll try to get there. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your day, and I will speak to you soon. Take care.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.